This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Oh, hi, hello, and welcome. This is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby. singing it's still weird. I am your host, Liv. Today, I am here with something a little different, I suppose. So I spoke with past guest and archaeologist, Steph Holmhofer, about all things pseudo-archaeology, conspirituality, and the so-called documentaries that are so popular these days. So Steph joined me last year during my Atlantis series to talk about similar topics, but we decided to chat again because, well, the misinformation and nonsense kind of like rewriting of history by quote-unquote documentaries and angry white men continues. I think it's really important to talk about these things because even if we aren't necessarily able to change anyone's mind if they're already like deep into this conspiracy, we can at least reach people who might be susceptible or who aren't even aware of the dangers of the types of media. Like, I don't think any of you listeners are really deep into these types of conspiracies, but at least you'll know what's going on. There are constantly new, again, so-called documentaries that spend all of their time talking about what archaeologists are apparently, like, hiding, or just they're inventing new things about the ancient world and ancient people that are just nonsense and historically inaccurate. They're showing shots of actual ancient sites and purporting to have all of this completely different information that rarely, if ever, actually includes, like, facts of any sort, let alone real evidence. But that is where the money goes when it comes to creating these documentaries, rather than to actual, real, and interesting history or archaeology. Anyway, I might not be fancy enough to get to make a documentary about real history and archaeology, but I can have knowledgeable people on this show to talk about the dangers of pseudo-archaeology and how to work against those things. Enter Steph. Also, Steph and I just have a great time talking, and it was just a perfect excuse to chat with her again. I will also warn, though, during this episode, I was in the first day or two of trying out a new ADHD medication, and my brain works a little bit differently than it usually does. But hey, ADHD, am I right? Such is life. It's a bit wacky. You might also notice some odd jumps in our conversation, and that's because, well, I put in a lot of effort to ensure that we're not naming names and risking any wrath. So there's a lot of things that were cut out because I am just one person with a podcast and I cannot be getting myself into trouble as much as I would like to explicitly talk about the very specific people that are doing these things and the dangers that they pose. But you can make some assumptions for yourselves. It's not that hard to figure out. I also mentioned a great podcast that Steph did in this episode. It's the CBC Ideas podcast, and they did an incredible episode about a very relevant person that, again, I won't name, but you can figure it out. I've linked to that episode in this description, and I highly recommend that you all listen. It was seriously interesting and insightful and just really well done, and it was done by the CBC. So, you know, they have a bit more freedom and less need to worry about such things. Conversations. It's never aliens, never a cataclysm. Pseudo-archaeology and documentaries with Steph Holmhofer. So I honestly just kind of wanted to have another conversation about pseudo-archaeology and like certainly any level of conspirituality too, because that's fascinating in itself, and I know that's what you know so much about, just because I've really only had that topic in relation to Atlantis, and it really does span so many other things, especially that just now keep coming up because of Ancient Apocalypse and Ancient Aliens and everything. So yeah, let's chat about that wild world because you know so much.
Did you watch the Atlantis episode? Is that the one that you watched?
Is there a full Atlantis episode? Oh no. Okay, no, I did not. I watched the first episode, except that, like, so a friend of mine put it on when we were like having dinner one night, and he was like, this is like, I know this is gonna make you mad, and so we're gonna put it on while we're cooking. And it did make me furious, and I just sort of like talked over most of it by being like, that's bullshit, that's nonsense. He just like is showing a thing and saying this thing about it, but like there's no correlation. He just like likes to put something up and then make claims about it that actually have no grounding in reality. So yeah, like I kind of just did that for the first like 20 minutes, and then at some point it got turned off. So like perhaps I should have learned a little bit more before we talk all about it. But here we are, because I also just don't want to give it the views. And I'm bad at watching documentaries, even when they make sense.
It is all good. You don't need to watch it.
No, thank you. I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, what was the Atlantis episode? I knew there was like connections to Atlantis, but I didn't know he had like dedicated a whole episode to it.
Yeah, it wasn't even like a whole episode. That it kind of felt like a weird like random inclusion, almost like one of those situations where maybe he thought people would have been mad had he not mentioned it.
Right.
It was so out of the blue. And his whole thing too is that it's like he's been describing this thing that basically is Atlantis,
yeah,
but he never calls it Atlantis except in America before, when he kind of toys with the idea of like, oh, maybe it is time I think about Atlantis. And that's kind of what he did in this episode too. I'm trying to remember. I think it was episode 4 or 5 where it just, it starts off and he's like, we need to talk about Atlantis. And it just kind of didn't go anywhere. It was just, yeah, I don't know. It just, it was weird. It was a weird inclusion in my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do I know, right?
I mean, the whole thing was weird. I should probably watch what I say. So we'll kind of work out the best way of handling this. Yeah. That stopped my brain entirely.
It's true though. Like things like that. Well, like things like that are things that we have to think about, which is so sad. Like if you think about the whole free speech or the whole position of I'm being censored, but everything that they do to like silence their critics. It's like, no, man, criticism is not censorship, first of all. But also, like, we're just criticizing. We're not actually trying to stop you from talking.
Yeah. Well, and ultimately, what we are doing here and, like, what you've done in other places, too, among so many other people who are speaking out against this, but, like, is just to literally defend archaeology and, like, history and science against what is essentially slander against those things. Which is like why I think it's important, but also, yeah, it's kind of wild to suggest that like doing that could then somehow be something to worry about.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's just a weird time we're living in where these are things that we genuinely have to think about, like, you know, defending our position or not necessarily even defending our position, but just being like, hey, like these are kind of, in my case, what I like to do is point out, like characteristics to look for that help people understand why something is not wrong or misconstrued or what twisted, because it's useful for other things too, right? Mm-hmm. But to think about how like just talking about something essentially in a way that someone doesn't like, how that just gets weaponized at times against us. It's just weird. It's just a weird time. Weird people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you mentioned something there, like now jumping back in, but you mentioned something there that I would then love to hear about. So because this is something that you do more dedicated, certainly, than I do, you were saying you have like things you tell people to look out for when it comes to dealing with this kind of content. Like what are like the kind of tips you use for this?
Yeah, so like that's my whole thing is that debunking after the fact is not effective. There are studies that show debunking actually isn't particularly effective. And at worst, it creates a backfire effect. And so I don't usually debunk. And that's not to say that there's no value for debunking. There are places where, say, like a blog or whatever for debunking is useful. It has its place. But I like to pre-bunk, it's called, or like inoculate people, where I sort of share information on what are the characteristics of pseudo-archaeology overall. What are things to look for that help you think maybe I should sort of take this with a grain of salt or look into it a little bit more myself or just not trust it altogether. And these are like characteristics that have been drawn together by many archaeologists over the past several decades. I'm trying to think. At least since the 70s, I've seen sort of dedicated conversations about what these characteristics are. And, you know, the number one is like, look for evidence of cherry picking and taking things out of context, which is all fine and dandy if you're within archaeology and you can recognize when something's been taken out of context. I understand if you're not in archaeology and you don't have access to all this information that we have, sometimes identifying cherry picking, it can be more difficult. But looking at things like, you know, providing an overly easy answer to a very big, complicated question. The number one, at least for me, is looking at the comments of stigmatized knowledge. I can't remember if we talked about, I think we talked about stigmatized knowledge last time, where it's this idea of somebody's making a claim that they say is true, but these knowledge validating institutions, organizations, individuals like scientists, archaeology labs, universities, museums, et cetera, are like, no, that's not exactly true. And there's several different types of stigmatized knowledge claims. And to me, at least, that's like the most defining characteristic when you see these claims of, you know, archaeologists are hiding truths or trying to prevent us from getting this information out there, things like that. That's when you have to think, maybe I need to just think about things a little more critically, or maybe try to find a bit more information, or even just reach out to archaeologists. Like, we love to talk. That's the irony of it, telling us that we're like trying to silence people because, you know, we're trying to keep all this knowledge secretive. No, we love to talk. We're just giant nerds and we love to share all this information. So most of us are very willing to chat with people if they want to reach out with questions. So yeah, and in the cases of stigmatized knowledge, that's when facts just cease to matter. Facts really don't matter at all, because stigmatization, those claims of stigmatization or censorship, you know, I'm being censored, that becomes the only proof that matters. And that's what makes it so difficult to like react or talk about things like that show or other similar shows and books, because every time we react to it, that's just seen as further proof of stigmatization, which becomes further proof that what's being said is true. So it's just, it's just a giant mess. But ultimately, people just should look for answers that seem a little too easy for really big, big conversations. Look for these claims of stigmatization or claims of hiding the truths or suppressing truths, rejecting truths, stuff like that. And if you can, look into or keep your eye open for cherry picking. Or if, you know, you're watching something and it just logically, there's a bit of logic missing there. There's like a big leap to a conclusion. Keep your eyes open for that too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting. And I think it's hard. I mean, it definitely is hard, at least on my end. Like I'm now so involved in the world, the ancient world, that like, I have trouble just knowing what is normal to people and what is not, like where that cherry picking would come in, because I think like I have trouble now recognizing what just any old person does and does not know about the ancient world. And like I realize it just it's a lot less than I think, but I'm so deep. Like I have a couple of friends who now sort of take it upon themselves to like ask me anytime anything comes up, and it's always like mysteries, so-called mysteries, right? Like, so I'm always getting these texts from friends now where it's like, so this mystery, is it actually a mystery or is it pretty well sorted? Like the same friend who made me watch Ancient Apocalypse because he just thinks it's funny also texted me the other day being like, so the Bronze Age collapse, is it actually a big mystery or is that kind of overblown? And I was like, thank you for asking. Let me tell you all about why the Bronze Age collapse was not actually a collapse, but more of a Bronze Age transition and blah, 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 you know? So like, it's interesting to me that like, as much as I thankfully have this kind of like grounding knowledge, but I don't know, this is sort of a spiraling story, but it's at least people are interested, even if their knowledge base is definitely always less than I think. And I need to remind myself constantly that like, not everyone spends all of their time looking into ancient mysteries and then memorizing all of them, or like, not mysteries actually. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's also fascinating too. That's why I want, like, as much as I, you know, I don't watch those things, but I'm still interested in where they're coming from and interested in like, I mean I like the debunking side, but I recognize what you're saying too, where it's not productive in like many cases. I think thankfully my show is a good instance of it being productive to an extent, if only because my listeners have like a good grounding. And so they probably weren't taken in to begin with. They're like ready to hear the reasons why it's not, you know, accurate. And then they can then use those in their own lives. And I enjoy thinking about that. Like, I know that the Atlantis series was beneficial for that kind of same reason, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I say like, there is still a place for things that do debunk. There's a really interesting little article that came out, I think it was last year, about how critically ignoring things is sometimes just as important or a better response than actually loudly responding to things. And one of the things they pointed out was the benefit of having things like lateral reading sources, or I would consider podcasts as well, like lateral listening, where, you know, somebody is watching a show or reading a book or whatever. And yeah, maybe they're like sitting on the fence and they just sort of quietly take it upon themselves to start looking into things a little bit further, and they come across a podcast like yours, where you've got lots of really cool people talking about really interesting stuff, or they come across a blog about, say, Göbekli Tepe or Oak Island or whatever. There's like specific examples in mind, which is why I pulled out Göbekli Tepe and Oak Island.
Yes.
And so they find these sites and they just quietly go and read and learn more themselves. And that's what lateral reading or lateral listening to listening is what I'm thinking of for debunking, or places for debunking. But debunking as like a direct response to something in, say, a heat of a moment, or, you know, day after, whatever, that's where it's not particularly effective. And there was like a couple of really interesting studies on, they took Facebook pages in particular, debunking Facebook pages and conspiracist Facebook pages. And what they ultimately showed was that debunking, it just creates or reinforces echo chambers. So yeah, the people who are more likely to listen to the debunking or read these threads or these blogs or whatever, the people who are already believing that or interested in that. And what they showed was a backfire effect where, say the conspiracist did decide to interact with the debunking page or comment or whatever, they're actually more likely to go back and talk about these things more in the conspiracist circles. And it sort of reinforced their ideas of something, which is the same as what we were saying earlier about reacting to stigmatized truth. How do we react without reinforcing it? So that's why debunking, direct debunking, isn't particularly effective. But it also just depends on what your purpose is and what you want the audience, or what your audience, intended audience is, and things like that all go into how you write threads or do podcasts or stuff. So there's a lot to consider when we react or decide to engage with things. And it's very complicated. It's more complicated than I think many people realize. You know, you think about claims of conspiracy or stigmatized truth, and people brush them off as kind of just kooky and silly and simplistic type of things. But no, it's very complicated.
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of reminds me of that phrase that I'm going to forget what it exactly is, so bear with me. But it's like the, you know, it's hard to convince somebody of something when their like livelihood or whatever, it depends on not believing it. That's a really bad quote of a phrase. But like this idea that like the conspiracists are already so deep into something that then like seeing a debunk is just gonna make them angry because it's like completely threatening what they've determined is their way of life. And then yeah, so it's like if you're already too deep, a debunk is like deeply unhelpful. But it's at least nice to have this kind of access points to people who have just sort of that vague interest and actually want to know more and are like open to critically viewing something. Like the one of the things that kind of spurred the idea of talking with you was that I listened to that CBC Ideas podcast. It was Ideas, right? Before I say that confidently. Yeah, great.
Yeah,
that CBC Ideas podcast that you did recently. It was really interesting, and like it was interesting for me because like a lot of the stuff I did know, and then a lot of the stuff I didn't. Like I learned a lot more about the books that Graham Hancock had written in the past, and things that I did not know about those, which kind of exploded my mind. So I'm going to link to that podcast in this episode's description, because I would also really recommend that anyone listen to that as well, because it was really well done and really interesting, and like had a lot of great information that I probably won't try to go into. But yeah, it's so interesting having those like, even just the way you could so easily say like Oak Island and Göbekli Tepe, because they are like, and it's like the same with Atlantis, right? They're like all one in the same, this like notion of something that has become so commonplace. Like I think Atlantis stands out in certain ways, but certainly closer to the Göbekli Tepe, which I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it sounds close enough. But yeah, it's like these things that people just sort of, you take in through, I guess, just pop culture and like media broadly, and then you immediately kind of have this idea that seems reasonable because all the stuff that is sort of the loudest in the room wants to make it sensationalized and mysterious. And like, mm-hmm. everyone loves a mystery. But yeah, I mean, that it's another thing I've said to the friends who keep texting me about whether something is in fact a mystery is like, there's very few actual mysteries about the ancient world, because if it's like a mystery, it's typically just that like we don't have a source or something. Like, it's not some yeah. big conspiracy mystery. Like, the first kind yeah. of interaction I had with this is I saw this Instagram reel that had gone like super viral. It's from an enormous account. I forget what it is now, thankfully, but like, it was this guy, and he's one of those guys on social media that like talks really loud and really fast. And so it sounds like he knows exactly what he's talking about, and he's not wrong at all. And mm-hmm. his claim was that he was like talking about, it was wild. He was like talking about the ancient Mycenaeans, you know, and how they were, you know, what they built. And he also peppers in like a lot of accuracy. So he's like, these are the Mycenaean palaces. Like, this is Linear B. Like, you know, this is Bronze Age Greece. And then he's like, and then boom, it all disappeared. Complete, like, nobody knows where they went, and it was gone. And then the mm-hmm. Greeks plunged into a dark age where they lost the ability to read the written word. Like, he suggested that it was like their brains just kind of like, boop, like suddenly no one's reading. They physically can't. And then he's like, from this dark age where there was no language, like the very real singular man Homer came about, and he wrote the Iliad, and he was so brilliant because he wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey in a time where there was no language. And I was just like, what is happening? So, but the number of people that read that and believe it because, or see it and believe it because it's like, it's a mystery that sounds exciting. It's mysterious. And it has these peppered in accuracies. Like, yes, the Mycenaeans were real. Yes, they had Linear B. Yes, the Greek language changed. Yes, there was like a big transition. No, there was not a Dark Ages, let alone, you know, what a Dark Age actually yeah. means. And it's just so yeah. many things. And yeah, it's just, I don't know. my brain is so not coherent right now. But it's just like, it's fascinating to me the way these things take off. And I guess just this idea that yeah. like, everyone wants a mystery. And I'm sorry that there aren't actual mysteries that aren't like just rooted in weird nonsense pseudo archaeology, and like half the time they're rooted in racism, and it's just so many things.
Yeah. Never let facts get in the way of good story. Isn't that what they say? Mm-hmm. But it's interesting actually too, in this example, it's another opportunity to talk about stigmatized knowledge, because mm-hmm. there are five types of stigmatized knowledge that were identified by Michael Barkin, political scientist, very influential work, very informative work. And of the five types of stigmatized knowledge, the most recognizable types are these claims of suppression or rejection or ignoring information. But there's also one called forgotten knowledge, claims of forgotten knowledge, where humanity went through this period of time where there was some sort of cataclysm, something destructive happened, and we today have sort of just forgotten about that period. Or, you know, there's things that are lost because of those cataclysms, and we've just sort of forgotten about them. In this example, what you're saying here is kind of a little bit reminiscent of these claims of forgotten knowledge, this idea of like people just lost their language through or writing systems through this cataclysm. Mm-hmm. No, you know, it doesn't really happen like that.
That's the thing. Like, there's a logic. Yeah. There's just this big like blank space where the logic should be, you know, like it reminds me, I mean, even the way you said cataclysm, like, I mean, that is at least from what I have seen of the show, it, like, that's kind of the whole basis, is that there was a, let's call it a cataclysm, so we're using certain words less, I guess, and like somehow, you know, all the what would be obvious proof is lost, like, because mm-hmm. the thing that I always feel, and I know it's because I'm in this privileged position of having knowledge that is not mm-hmm. common, you know, in the broader world, like, but the thing that always comes up to me is like, why wouldn't there be more evidence? Like, if there is this, it's like Atlantis, right? If there yeah. was an actual lost enormous island that was whatever people want to think Atlantis was, depending on who you're talking to, like, it's simply impossible that all evidence would be lost. Like, that's just not how the world functions. And it applies to so many of these big mysteries, is like, there would be more, you know?
Especially when you think about the fact that so many of these claims, these pseudo-archaeological claims, are very big, to do with something that's very big and grand. So Atlantis, for example, or let's say extraterrestrials, maybe extraterrestrials from Atlantis or Atlanteans from outer space, because that happens. So like, you know, it's these big claims of these very grand cultures or societies coming down and influencing, everybody in the world, giving them technology and knowledge and skills and all these things. And then all of that information or all that, evidence, like, you know, why are, it just gets wiped from the earth. So why are people, they're not written records over here about this big grand place, Atlantis, if it was so big and so, you know, picking fights with everybody and going off and doing their thing in all these places outside of Atlantis, why is nobody else talking about it? Nobody else writing things down? Because there are so many places around the world that had very intense record keeping, or people writing down like everything, right? Where is that information, let alone the physical remnants of a place like Atlantis, but just the written information, where is that? It's not there. It's nowhere. And then, you know, people just come up with all sorts of excuses to try to explain why that is. And that's where you look for those leaps in logic or missing pieces and whatnot. So it's kind of always the same.
Well, Atlantis is a bad example for that, because Plato did it himself, where he was like, I think even in his dialogues, he's like, the language changed or something. Like, he put something in there for like a reason why the Greeks wouldn't remember it from Athens. And it's like, dude, you made this worse. Like, it was already bad.
Yeah.
Like, you on, like, Plato, are part of the conspiracy. God.
Oh, Plato, come on. Thinking about things,
truly
too.
A troublemaker, honestly. That guy.
It's true.
It's just, I mean, it's all generally so fascinating. And I think so much of it also comes down to, and who knows how much we can talk about this, given both of our fields, but like, it of course, the actual pop culture, like the actual media that makes these things available, other than things like podcasts and blogs and whatever, like things that just regular people create, like, all of the media creating this stuff is putting all the money into the mysteries and with no interest in actually validating or confirming anything. So it as soon as you see it on TV, I mean, I think that that's less true now, but certainly is true for an older generation and was true, you know, a couple of decades ago. But it's like, when you see something on TV, it inherently becomes more believable. Like, you want to believe it because all of these talking heads are trying to convince you of it. And so it's difficult to get past that, or even to deny it, because all the money and the backing, the media itself is much more concerned with making money off of a mystery than making money off of nice archaeologist talking about how, you know, what actual archaeology is like.
It's true. Things like this, they sell. Like you say, they make money for places like Netflix and Amazon Prime. They make money for people on YouTube because, I mean, people are inherently interested in this mystery. And pop culture itself also is just super influential in conspiracism, in conspiracy theory circles of all types. Pop culture has a really, really influential role because a lot of folks, well, I shouldn't say a lot of folks, but there are folks, conspiracists, who are creating media companies designed to intentionally blur the lines between reality and fiction. But then that's also just happening already. There's so many folks who watch, for example, I was watching, while I was working out this morning, I turned on this documentary about the founding of America and how it was, they were trying to connect it to Francis Bacon and the idea of the new Atlantis. and Freemasonry. And they went on a lot in this show about the movie, the National Treasure movies, and how the National Treasure movies painted Freemasonry in a very positive light. And they were absolutely convinced that Freemasons were involved in making this, these movies. And they were like filling these movies with truthful, esoteric knowledge that only select people would have understanding of, and things like this could decode it. And it's not even just National Treasure. Sorry, my chair keeps sinking. I just keep going lower and lower and lower. Like Atlantis, my chair is Atlantis.
There we go.
Right? But it's not just National Treasure either. It's all sorts of movies are seen as these forms or these places for soft disclosure, where the idea is that insiders were involved in making these movies and hiding specific knowledge, tidbits of knowledge in these movies, making it easier to spread that knowledge around. Like, people aren't very upfront, like, oh my gosh, like, no, I can't listen to this. It just kind of eases people into it. And then also codes for people who already know what they're looking for, type of thing. And right. So you have, when something gets put out, like you were sort of mentioning, when something gets put out on variety of media, it does sort of become this legitimizer. Media acts as this legitimizer in many different ways.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought
ways
about
too.
Yeah. Yeah. National Treasure? Just sort of taking that in. I love the idea of a Nicolas Cage movie being like, I mean, just the thing to take. Anyway, that's really interesting. It reminds me of, like, I mean, it just makes me think of, like, the entire Illuminati conspiracy, which I don't even know much about, but I feel like that's one that's, like, talked about so much that it must just get an increase in, like, you know, people believing in it just because it is referenced in so many things. It makes me think of that, like, maybe it's an insider, like, they're all just referencing the Illuminati so that we don't think it's real because it's really so real.
I didn't get very far into this show, but Illuminati is in the title of it.
Perfect. Yeah. I personally got an email inviting me to join the Illuminati recently.
Oh,
I think it was legitimate.
Nice.
Yeah. They wanted to promise me a lot of power and control over the world. All I had to do was give my email address and my name. Oddly, they did not ask for a credit card, but I imagine that would have come later.
Yeah, I think you have to sign up first and then you pay your dues.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they had a Gmail account with the word Illuminati and a couple of numbers afterwards. So I think it was pretty legit.
Oh, yeah. That sounds really legit for sure. Trust the numbers. So
that means I'd really made it. It's fascinating. Yeah, that's all it takes. I mean, the idea of soft disclosure, like, what a good phrase. And just that that entire idea of, like, releasing that kind of knowledge in that kind of way. I mean, I was, like, sitting down to get on this call and I was like, I really did not think enough about what exactly we're going to talk about, because I just knew all that's in your head is interesting, but I have to, like, actually
so
ask
much
you the right questions
knowledge
to get it out. Yes, but, like, it's fascinating. And I just don't know, like, I know Atlantis because I kind of forced myself to learn it, but yeah, I other than just, like, vaguely paying attention to random things, I feel like I don't know enough. I was in a local bookstore here recently, and I found a book about Atlantis that I'd never heard of before, and it was pretty wild. Actually, you know what? Maybe it wasn't even about Atlantis. I think it was about – no, I think there was, like, Atlantean references, but it was actually about claiming that the Trojan War happened in Portugal, and that actually it, like, was a whole Atlantic – and so I think Atlantis did come in, but it was, like, a whole Atlantic endeavor, like, as if – everything took place on that side.
There is a guy who claims that Atlantis was actually in Portugal, and he claims to have found proof of it in Portugal. I can't remember where in Portugal. I was in Portugal recently, but I didn't have time to go looking for Atlantis. But
no, that's too bad.
Yeah, there's a guy. There's a guy who does talk about Portugal a lot in relation to Atlantis.
I was on Santorini last year, and I did not see any proof of Atlantis, but again. Yeah, I did go looking all that far. Actually, that's not true. Santorini really loves to use the idea that they're Atlantis, so it's probably a bad example. Atlantis Books was closed, unfortunately, so I didn't get. I'm sure that sad. They have the proof there. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, I just kind of wish, I guess, and this is like purely my nerd, but I just wish that like there was media that wanted to make exciting, like high budget documentaries about real stuff, even real mysteries. Like I can't help but thinking about like the mystery cults. Like those are actual mysteries. Less so Eleusis, we know a decent amount. I personally am completely obsessed with the Samothracian mystery cult, which we know very little about. And I'm like, great, let's do that. That's an actual mystery. The word mystery is in the title. It's where we get the word, so you know it's always been that way. Like, let's talk about that instead of nonsense mystery.
It's true. I also wish that folks were more willing to put together something like that Netflix show, but for actual like archaeological historical things, and you get the right people in there talking about this stuff, and it's just like endlessly fascinating. And it's just, I think there is an interest there for it. It's just, it's hard for people to access, but I would really love to see something really high budget and really exciting, talking about these things and breaking these things down, I think would also be super interesting. And the irony too, the funny thing is I saw a lot of reactions to that Netflix show on social media. I'll just keep calling it that Netflix
show.
Yeah,
I think it's safe.
So I was watching a lot of reaction on Twitter in particular, and TikTok a little bit too. And a lot of people were saying, you know, archaeologists should be more grateful because, you know, we have no money and shows like this will generate interest and save the discipline and get us money. And it shows, you know, there's an interest in archaeology and we need to be grateful for it. And I think, no, that's not the case. It shows there's an interest in pseudo archaeology. And I do genuinely think that some people will get caught up in that who are looking for archaeology. And unfortunately, this is what they get access to. Because there is a lot out there already about archaeology on YouTube, podcasts. There are some excellent documentaries out there, but there is just nothing like a regular series show. And I think that would be really, really cool and really helpful as well. But yeah, I don't think that Netflix show is going to do anything to help archaeology.
No, I mean, if anything, it's like discounting archaeology. And that's what happens in so many of those shows, because in order to make anyone believe their theories, they have to suggest that archaeologists are lying or they don't know what they're talking about or all these different things. Because I mean, we were talking about this at the top with what you're saying, but like the biggest way to deny any of these things is that no archaeologist is talking about it. And so you have to say they're lying because they're not talking about it. And the reason not talking about it is because it's not true. And because typically they have like proof otherwise. Like it's.
Yeah. I think that's the thing is when we watch shows like this, I think the question really should be like, be thinking about beyond what's necessarily being said about archaeologists. Like, to be honest, one of my complaints is about the way that archaeologists reacted to the show is that we centered ourselves overwhelmingly. And sure, yeah, we should be concerned about what's being said about archaeology and archaeologists, but we have to question why is this being said about archaeologists and archaeologists? Why are show hosts like the host of that show and other shows that show in particular went really hard on it. Why exactly do they want to discredit and completely move archaeologists out of the way? What is the purpose of that? And we have to kind of now keep looking a little bit further in the distance of like, okay, so say they successfully get archaeologists out of the way and discredit archaeologists and nobody now believes what archaeologists or trusts archaeologists. For what purpose? What are they trying to get out there that we perhaps are preventing being said or criticizing being said, I should say? What is the purpose of those alternative theories? And in the case of that host, like, I don't think he's intentionally being malicious or intentionally writing or speaking for that very, I've brought this up before. I don't think he's intentionally writing or speaking for a very far right audience. But they find a lot of value in his work. And I have seen some of their reactions to the show as well that really drive that point home. And so that's what we have to think about as well when we're reacting and engaging with things like this. Like, yeah, it sucks that our feelings are getting hurt in this process, but we're not the only ones that we should be concerned about. And you know, we need to talk more about, Indigenous histories being stolen again and rewritten, and why are they being rewritten and what are the impacts of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it brings it perfectly to the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is like the reason why it's a big deal. It's not just like annoying that these shows, you know, are wrong. It's not just annoying that they're discounting archaeologists and real archaeology, but it tends to be by and large that by suggesting all of these things that are not accurate and are not based in history and archaeology, like whether intentionally or not, you end up discounting the people who actually lived there and actually did the things. There's a tweet going around today. I don't know actually the place that was referenced, but it was a tweet by a major TV show that talks about this stuff quite a bit on a certain channel that has a word in it that describes what we're talking about. And basically, it was like it's a room, an ancient structure, and like this big epic room. And they just sent showed this picture, and they're like, "Look at this incredible structure. Could it have been built by aliens?" And it's like, No, it was built by the people who lived there in the ancient times. They were incredible. And that comes up so often, but by and large, what it ends up doing, is discounting their actual abilities. And of course, very often, though not exclusively, the people being discounted are not Western and white. And so, like, it just then inherently has these racist aspects. Of course, it was really obvious in the Atlantis stuff once I went into the history of, like, where it all comes from, you know, a couple hundred years ago. But it's so true for everything. I don't know enough about Göbekli Tepe, but is that I would imagine it's a pretty good example of that happening. I don't know how much you know about it either, but we'll talk about this whole concept.
I see Göbekli Tepe being brought up periodically in those spaces as well. Sometimes in the concept or the context of the people there didn't build it themselves. Someone else, either extraterrestrial or a superior white culture, had to build it for them. Or other times, I see the further into the dark corners of the internet I go, I find the people who are like, no, it was actually like our white ancestors who built this, and you're just wrongfully giving it credit to other people. They're a little bit more aggressive about it.
Really? And what a surprise.
I know, shocker, right?
That's my sarcasm just comes out at the wrong time.
You've got that approach of like, you know, is extraterrestrials or Atlanteans taught people how to build it, or it's the opposite where it's like, no, they didn't build it at all. And shows and podcasts and YouTube videos and TikToks and all these social media things, when people are putting this information out there, they're proposing these, sorry, I got cat hair flying over. They're proposing
my
these
cat
theories
jumped up on me like 2 seconds ago. So
nice. Sorry. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. One of my cats is very chatty, and he's been just like marching around shouting. I can hear him.
Oh
my
God, that's my cat 9 times out of 10. Yep. The best.
Right. So the people who are putting these theories out there, if that is not their intended audience, And I don't think everybody is intending that to be their audience, but the fact that needs to be recognized is that is an audience that does find value in their work, and there needs to be some sort of responsibility for that. So in the particular case of this show host, he, I think, has reacted to that side of things once in his response letter to a certain archaeological association. Where he essentially, threw up his hands and was like, well, it's not my problem. It is, though. It is your problem if you know how people are using your work and you are doing nothing to stop that. That is your problem.
Yeah, it's such a white man response to just say that's not my problem. Oh my God. Like, it just really is. Like, I just can't see anyone else saying that. I think
it really is.
Yeah.
And it's not just pseudo-archaeologists either, right? Like, I've seen archaeologists respond the same way.
Definitely.
So there's just all around, people need to take responsibility. If you don't want, you can't control at many times how your work is being taken up or used. I recognize that, but that doesn't mean that you've lost control about saying something about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you put the stuff out there. It's inherently your responsibility. It's funny because some of my earlier episodes, I didn't research as well. Comparatively to how I research now, it's like I didn't do anything at all. I just sometimes people will learn something from me and I'm like, shit, that's wrong. And like, I have to like do this whole response of like, and it's literally like a myth fact. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter, ultimately. Like, also not least because Greek mythology has so many variations and all these different reasons why ultimately somebody learning like a vaguely wrong mythological thing from me is like not the end of the world. And I'm like, oh God, I've taught somebody the wrong thing. What am I going to do? How am I going to fix this? And I just think that's such, it's just so indicative of how different types of people handle things.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so easy for like certain people to be able to just kind of wipe their hands clean when they're not the ones who are now dealing with those impacts of being told that you don't actually have a connection to this land or this site because someone else built it. It wasn't you. That has real world ramifications. And, you know, if you're not the one who has to deal with those ramifications, it becomes a lot easier for you to just wipe your hands clean of it, which shouldn't be the case.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Where am I going with this? It's all so interesting. And yet, can I form like a question about it or like a statement? Barely. It's so interesting the way that these things then end up spiraling and like so easily seem to shift over into the darker side of the world. And so often, I think it's because of the internet broadly, because it's really easy to get into the dark side of anything on the internet. And so often, like, even I'm reminded how easy or like how, I guess, like how many people are so stuck in certain ideas that they get incredibly defensive if they're suggested to be otherwise, even when they're not like full on conspiracies. But yeah, I mean, I don't even know where I'm going with this, but it applies to all of this stuff. This idea that like once you have this concept in your head, like even just me talking about how the origins of Atlantis are inextricably tied to racist theories, like people got really mad. It's funny because I got barely any response on the podcast. And I think that says a lot about how podcasting works and how until Spotify made a certain change, it was really hard to like immediately access the podcaster to profess your thoughts on like something like YouTube. But I posted on Instagram. And that's the big difference. I posted on Instagram a reel that was just like, hey, here are the rational reasons why like the origins of Atlantis are tied to racism. And people were just like so angry. And I was like, how are you so tied to the idea of Atlantis that me stating facts about it's, I want to say history, but what I mean is like the idea of it that came about in the last 300 years, you know, that I talked about so much on the podcast, but those ideas, those recent ideas are incredibly tied to racism, even if the ancient one was not. And like, I don't understand why people can get, you point out these things, they're so accurate, like you're using sources. I mean, granted, it's a reel, so it's like 1 minute, but like people get so worked up. Or it even happened when I tried to talk about, I think, the Dark Ages. I like made a post about how the term Dark Ages is also problematic. It actually refers to a lack of sources. It does not, you know, say anything about the people of the time or whatever. And I basically said all of that. And I was like, and on top of that, the Greece didn't have one. We have records from that time period. It's no longer called the Dark Ages by people who are, you know, in that field, whatever. And like people get angry at that too on the internet. And so I think it all just, I mean, I'm just full of anecdotes apparently today, but it all gets tied back to these same ideas where like, it's so easy to have any thoughts that you have like spiral into these really dark ideas because the internet is just so reactionary and like ready to be mad and tell people they're wrong about everything.
And especially when it comes to something like Atlantis, which a lot of people has been tied to this idea of progress. The Atlanteans were really impressive people who went and spread knowledge to all the civilized people around the world. The moment you try to point out to somebody how that's quite problematic, if it's somebody who believes that they've benefited from that, of course, they're going to get really defensive. They don't want to have their positions of power challenged, just like in so many cases of trying to challenge whiteness or white supremacy. The people who benefit from those systems, they don't want to lose that system. So they get really, really defensive and angry and snappy and try to shut things down. And especially, it's interesting, too, talking about the difference between reactions on podcasts versus Instagram, thinking about the audiences, too, in each of these spaces, because Instagram is definitely, there's a lot of conspiratorial stuff on Instagram. So I'm not really that surprised that people would react that way in Instagram. And if thinking about what we were saying earlier about YouTube comments, too, watching how people react on YouTube versus how they react on Twitter versus how they react on Reddit. and then
yeah,
not even going to get into the really dark fringe social media yeah, places that are yeah, deeply unhinged. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it too, it all, it comes down to, I mean, this is basically what you were saying, but like where people, like the people that are on there. Yeah. Because people, there's a lot of conspiracy and conspiratorialists and all that on Instagram and YouTube. But it's also, I think, people like where, why they are accessing a thing. Like I think people, mm-hmm. a lot of people who access podcasts are looking to learn. Not mm-hmm. all the time. There's a lot of podcasts that are not about teaching, but like certainly if somebody's coming to mine, I think they have this idea that they're going, they yeah. are looking to learn something.
Yeah.
And so if you're accessing a podcast, you're like, I'm, you're open-minded enough to learn whether, you know, you might react badly, yeah. what have you, versus coming across a reel, you're just on Instagram and you're like, it's like a reaction immediate because it's an immediate reaction because of you mm-hmm. didn't seek out that knowledge and somebody's trying to throw mm-hmm. it in your face that like this thing you think you knew, you know, is mm-hmm. racist, and then you're just immediately mad. And
yeah,
or I mean, it reminds me of my reaction when I saw the guy saying that Homer sprung out of a dark ages where there was no language. And I felt the same way. I immediately reacted and I was like, what did I just listen mm-hmm. to? And I was mad. And of course, you know, my version of that one, it's that like I'm a lot more righteous because it was nonsense. But like immediately replied and I was like, no, none of that is true. Like, here's why. And so that's the difference too, is like the type of anger. But I mean, I'll admit, like, it's the same ultimately response yeah. of just being like, I am angry that I just learned this because it challenged mm-hmm. my viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I know my viewpoint is right. So.
Yeah, it's true. And within conspiracism in general, like feelings and emotions are a big part of that, which is also why facts don't entirely help. Just yeah. throwing facts at people aren't going to change minds very easily. It's not impossible. It's just not going to be the most effective because it is more about feelings and emotions mm-hmm. and that visceral reaction to something than it is about a fact. And you see that mm-hmm. in the reactions and the social media comments about that show, where people are like, well, you know, I was open-minded until I saw the archaeologist getting mad and throwing out these ad hominem attacks and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, it's not the case.
Yeah. 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 It's just challenging one's worldview. It mm-hmm. elicits quite a reaction.
Mm-hmm. Because essentially you're also sort of challenging this idea of community. And so mm-hmm. like, communities are built around shows like this or theories like this or the show's host. There are some mm-hmm. theories that really attract people, but there are certain within pseudo-archaeology, I noticed there's like certain proponents that do attract very strong following specifically for them, that show host being one of them, where people mm-hmm. will believe anything he says because it's him who's saying it. And so you've got this community of very like-minded individuals following him who have found each other and support each other. And now all of a sudden that community is being challenged. It's the same for like, you know, religious movements or cults, for lack of a better term, why it's very hard to break people out of these groups is, you know, why would you willingly leave this community who's accepted you for who you are and these ideas that you have. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason people react so strongly in certain cases, is that adherence to community, their community is under threat. So they mm-hmm. think.
That reminds me of another thing that I think is a real contributor to these problems, which is, so the host of the Netflix show, the reason why that community exists is primarily because he's written a lot of books over a very long time and mm-hmm. people have read those books and become fans and liked his ideas and all these things. And it reminds me of something that comes up often on Twitter, like a couple times a year, I swear, but has been for a long time, and I have always had like a direct connection which is that, like, so typically books that are published by like big trade publishers, the big mm-hmm. five, I think there are now, there keep being fewer and fewer, but you know, companies like Penguin Random House and HarperCollins and all mm-hmm. of these, like, it tends to be mm-hmm. that nonfiction books published by publishers like that are not fact-checked unless the author wants it to be fact-checked and is willing to pay mm-hmm. for it. And that is not something mm-hmm. that most people know. And it comes up so often. And I swear there's like a book a year that gets published and there's something that's really wrong and people get really mad and they're like, how did this get through fact checking? And then a bunch of people who do know have to get on there and kind of explain, like, actually, while you think maybe that's something that should happen, even when it comes to nonfiction books that are purporting to have real knowledge that's important, it doesn't actually happen. An author would have to push for it. They would have to pay for it. That rarely happens because authors don't make enough that they want to pay for it. Mm. And like, it's funny because it's always shocking to people. Like, I swear this level of like shock and awe and disgust happens on Twitter so often. But I used to work in publishing and like I would mostly I would also deal with like actual invoices for that being done. And like, I think that I saw two over 3 years of doing that job of like a book actually being fact checked. Because it's not common. It's an extra expense. Publishing is cheap. Like, but it just makes me think of all of this man's books, which purport to have all this knowledge and be historical and like groundbreaking and all these things. And it's like, yeah, I mean, he could say anything though, ultimately. Like, and that applies to so many trade published books. That so many things happen like that. It reminds me of The Da Vinci Code. Remember when that came out and like a huge number of people, it connects, I think, really well to the National Treasure thing you were talking about.
Yeah, because it does. Yeah.
An enormous number of people took what it was contained in The Da Vinci Code and his other books and like ran with it and were so convinced that at least parts of it were true. And it makes me think of that soft disclosure. I think that must be like a great example of that, where it's like, well, this is like, I don't remember if it was the Illuminati or what conspiracy it was, but like, yeah, this is the truth. Like, you know, thankfully, I don't remember most of the claims in that book, but I do remember the explosion of people believing it.
Yes, yes, it's true. And even today, periodically, that one comes up. Da Vinci Code comes up again. And, and people, there still seems to be this fierce idea that, or strict idea that parts of it were true. I see that pop up periodically. And that's actually, a common tactic too with certain pseudo-art books is they count on the inability to fact check. And that's why some books are just so thick and why these authors pull so much from so many different sources of information and different places and fields and whatnot is because they're also counting on their audience not to be able to do the work of fact checking or looking into every single source of information. It gives this appearance of being really knowledgeable and really well studied, but it's just a tool to pull the wool over the audience's eyes.
The more things and the more things that you reference that are factual mixed in with theories, it really makes it incredibly difficult to piece one thing from another, which I think is what made the Da Vinci Code such a big thing, was because he did talk about a lot of history and art and all these different things that were true and accurate. And even like that is fiction explicitly. And yet still it became this enormous thing. So I can only imagine, you know, what it takes or like how easily like something that says it's nonfiction, you know, and references all of these things from reality, like how easy it is to take all of it as true, regardless of what it ultimately says.
Exactly. And it presents itself as looking and sounding very authoritative. And then they also, the other thing that sort of gets used sneakily is this idea, this like citational circles where these guys are all citing each other just over and over and over again in all of their different books and all of their shows and their podcasts and everything. They mention the same names over and over and over again. Because that also lends an air of authority of like, oh, you know, I keep seeing this name pop up in like these seven books over here. They all talked about this person here and this person here talked about those seven people as well. So they must know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Another characteristic of stigmatized knowledge claims. Thank you, Michael Barkin, for writing that down.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect.
Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
It's, I mean, it's so wild, but it also makes so much sense when you break it down in these ways. And I think this is something that you brought up when we talked for Atlantis, which mm-hmm. is also making a point to not, you know, immediately blame people, I think. I'm sure you said mm-hmm. it way better. But, like, this idea, like, it is really easy to fall into that stuff yeah. because unless you know any better, it's so easy to look at these things and see all this, like, yeah, authoritative language, citing so many mm-hmm. different people. It's so easy to take that as truth. And, like, it doesn't make yeah. somebody, you know, stupid because they did. It's yeah. just a matter of, like, yeah, it's not hard when somebody presents it to you in that way.
Yeah, exactly. I'll never fault anyone for falling for this stuff, regardless of what show or video or whatever it is. Because, yeah, if you're not sure, and again, that comes down to access. Who has access to the knowledge as well? Mm-hmm. It's easy for me to look at things and be like, oh, man, that was all cherry-picked and pulled together, and that's not the actual mm-hmm. context, because I have that access to that information. Not everybody has that access, so it's easy to fall into these things. So, yeah, I'll never fault anyone for finding themselves there by accident. The thing that matters is how you react or what you do when you know, after the fact, when somebody's been like, hey, you know what, that's not really true. That's not, presented in the actual, or it's been taking out context or whatever. Like, that's the important thing, is what do you do after now you have this knowledge being given to you? Mm-hmm. That's what counts. At least to yeah. me, that's what is important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was something I really wanted to emphasize when I was covering Atlantis, is to come at it like, it's absolutely fine if you had no idea. I'm just here to tell yeah. you know, and it yeah. 'Cause it is so easy. Like, I didn't know, you know, for the longest time, and I was fascinated by Greek mythology, but, like, the world we mm-hmm. live in presents these things as if they are, you know, mysterious, as if Atlantis is a Greek myth, or, you know, all these different things. And people do want mystery, mm-hmm. you know, like we were talking about mm-hmm. before. Mystery is exciting, and mm-hmm. so I understand the desire for it, But yeah, once it's kind of pointed out to you how it's not a mystery and how suggesting it is a mystery can often be problematic, you know, that's when you got to kind of turn around and take a look.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to keep watching these things, I mean, keep watching them. But like, maybe then participate and pull up that responsibility to confront those terrible uses of it. Or if you see like people, you know, who are starting to really fall for these things in the not so great ways, and you recognize that, say something, that kind of thing. And I think too, for, you know, archaeologists, we also need to work on finding better ways to engage and react to these things more collectively, I think would also make a big difference. And learn more about what might work, what doesn't really work, what makes things worse. And let's just, you know, collectively work together as well on our side to engage with these and confront things like this.
I think everyone should work together and come up with a big, great, exciting idea for a TV show that sounds like a mystery, sounds like it's just as exciting as all the pseudo-archaeology, but actually secretly presents only accurate information. And yes, I have already tried to pitch these ideas. So far, they have not worked, but I am still hoping that we will just get a show that's like super high budget and documentary and amazing, but also accurate.
It'll happen. It will happen. One day, I know it.
Goals.
Yeah, it's hard. I would love to watch a show like that. I love the idea of like, here's a thing. How did it come to be? So like even thinking about Atlantis, people want to talk about Atlantis. All right, let's do a show about Atlantis, talking about how it got from Plato to what it is now. I think that would be so interesting.
I know. It's great. People want to hear it. Like, they want to hear it.
Yeah.
Because it's fascinating the way Atlantis did, you know, become what it is. And then you still have this, like, mystery of Atlantis. Like, Atlantis is a mystery. It's just that the mystery is how it went from Plato to what it is now.
Yeah, exactly.
And we have kind of the answers. But that's,
and ancient aliens theories. It's the same thing. The history of how ancient aliens theories became a thing is so interesting. And it draws from so many of the same sources of Atlantis as Atlantis as well. So like, I think that would be just so interesting. And I feel like it would hit on that idea that conspiracy sells. People would be drawn to it and interested for that, and I think they would come out of it learning a lot more. Like, I know when I talk about things like that and I break things down, I get a lot of comments back being like, oh, that was really interesting, like I didn't know about this beforehand, I didn't know about that. Like, it just, I think people would be really, really interested in that.
I think all of this stuff is so exciting. We just all, and I know a lot of archaeologists talk about this too, like finding ways to make it clear how exciting actual archaeology and actual history is. Because I think that for the longest time, it's just come across as stuffy or like not for everybody, or, you know, you have to, you know, be in academia or whatever to handle it. And like, it really is all so fascinating. And like, that's certainly what I've been trying to do with this show for like almost 6 years now, and I think it's working, but like, there needs to be more of this, like, and on TV primarily. Somebody needs to give us TV money to make a show about how Atlantis got to be Atlantis. Like, that would be fascinating to look at that.
It would be. It would be so interesting.
It's such a fascinating transition. And I'm sure that, you know, all the conspiracies and conspirituality and like pseudo-archaeology that you look at, like, I don't know as much about it because it's not Greek, but like, I'm sure there are so many instances of that too, where like, just looking at how something becomes what it is, you know, it is just so fascinating in itself.
I do a lot of that in, as I'm like researching, as I'm like writing a paper, putting something together, something pops up and I'm always like, wait, where did this idea come from? And always just tracing back and looking back and being like, how did it get to what it is? Like, this sounds so wild and outlandish. Where did this possibly come from? And it's so interesting to trace that history back, like an archaeology of pseudo-archaeology. It's just, or the archaeology of extraordinary claim, as I've called it sometimes. It's just, it's so interesting. And I think that it also sort of like helps, how do I phrase it? Like it's just something that people are just generally interested in. Like it's something, it's a reaction or a proactive thing to talk about the history of something and how something was developed is a really good proactive mm-hmm. tool as well. If we are concerned about what people are taking away from these things or how we can sort of break into that a little bit, snap some attention away from mm-hmm. these things. Cause it's the idea of like a magic trick. And when you reveal the sleight of hand, it sort of loses that, that mystery. But we need to, if we're trying to pull the mystery out of something, we need to also replace it with something, a new narrative, an actual factual, truthful narrative that's just as interesting. And it is just as interesting, but it's, people are so focused on the pseudo arc that it's hard to break through. But mm-hmm. I love tracing ideas back. I think it's so interesting when you find out where mm-hmm. an idea came from. And often they like intertwine with the same historical sources, like freaking Blavatsky. It's always Blavatsky. She pops up.
I was waiting for you to say that.
Right? It's always Blavatsky. She's everywhere. And but that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a huge dork. I accept that I'm interested in these things because I am a huge dork, but I think it is just genuinely something people are interested based on comments that I get from folks. People are interested in learning those histories.
Mm-hmm. I think especially when it's presented in a way that like keeps them excited and I mean, even just the way you talk about it, it's the same as how I talk about all the Greek myths where it's like, I'm so excited to tell you this niche thing. Like the level of detail that I now go into because of how long I've been doing this and how obsessive I am with the ancient sources is like, I'm here to tell you for like 15 minutes straight where one idea, you know, for one god came from and how it's completely the opposite of this other idea. And let me explain like ancient sources and all the intricacies, and like people want to hear it somehow because I am so pumped and nerdy about this because it is so fascinating. So you just need like, you need those people mm-hmm. who are equally nerdy and weird mm-hmm. and just like want to tell you about it because it makes it so much easier to take in and like it immediately gets you excited. I think it's kind of the same thing as the shows that present these ideas with such white man confidence that mm-hmm. like you immediately believe it. Like we can do that mm-hmm. too without the white man confidence and just with like nerds being nerdy and like being thrilled to talk about something. It's the same effect, exactly. I think.
right it really does. It's so exciting. Sometimes I do this with my like Brother 12 stuff too. Maybe I just live in my own little mm-hmm. Brother 12 bubble, but like every time I reread Brother 12 stuff, I find something new that suddenly explains something else about mm-hmm. him all of a sudden makes sense, and I'm just like, wow, this is so interesting. Like, and I'll, you know, I usually share these things on Twitter, and there's my like random little Brother 12 things. Because it is so interesting when you find that like piece that suddenly like, oh, all of that suddenly makes sense why he's saying this. It's because of this. Mm-hmm. It's the same for this kind of stuff, ancient aliens and Atlantis things. It's like these things kind of seem really like goofy. There's some like particular variants of Atlantis and ancient alien stuff that are so wild that it's like, how could this possibly be a thing? And then mm-hmm. when you find that trail that led to it, like it's, see, I'm nerding out, I'm dorking out again about it.
It's
so interesting. it's awesome.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just as exciting as the actual conspiracy. So we just need to get louder about mm-hmm. it, I think, is the key.
Yes, I think so. So any like television executives that are obviously listening to this, please get in touch.
Yeah, we have some great ideas about an Atlantis show, and you could market it exactly like all the Atlantis shows that want to prove that Atlantis is real and they want to find it. You can market it like that and then get people mm-hmm. in, and you're going to get all the same viewers. And then we're just going to explain how it went from this random thing that Plato said that nobody cared about at all to mm-hmm. what it is today.
Right? Well, you know, even think about like your podcast, right? Like you have it's a very popular podcast. You have a very big audience. Could you imagine like turning your podcast into a television program, a visual? Because some people really like that visual side of things. Some people like to just listen. Yeah. Some people like the visual. Like even just turning your podcast into an episodic show where, like, yeah, you've got the folks who you interview on the show in these episodes and then going off to the places that you're talking. That would be so cool. Super, super interesting.
I've been trying to do that too. Yeah. So many goals and plans and schemes, but oh my God. Turns out that Hollywood works very slowly, and also they are not as nerdy as I would like them to be.
No, we gotta find the nerds. We will find the nerds in Hollywood and make this happen.
Gotta be there. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Goals. Yep. Oh my gosh. Well, my brain feels like there's probably more for us to talk about, but I've also kept you for an hour and a half. And also, I feel like I am utter smush as much as I would like my brain to be more functioning. But like when it comes to anything about any of these topics, like is there, I mean, is there anything else, I guess, but also if you have time, because please stop me if you just need to go.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Like, but yeah, I mean, is there anything else in terms of like how you often present these ideas or like the way you talk about it in your work that you think is like really beneficial for people to know or to just, I don't know, anything else you want to say?
<I'm so sorry. laughs> No, it's all good. It's all good. yeah, it's just, yeah. Just reiterating the fact that like, I'm not mad or sad at people who get really swept into things like this. It happens. Just go, you know, think about the characteristics that we've talked about, looking for these, you know, you hear these really big grand explanations, you're sort of seeing like a little bit of a strange leap in logic. The moment you see these claims that somebody's trying to suppress some sort of truth, just use that as like a bit of a light bulb, a bit of a red flag moment, and spend a bit of extra time going and seeking out some sources, or approaching an archaeologist on social media or email or whatever. Spend a little bit of extra time critically thinking about what you're looking at. That's sort of my big takeaway message. And then for folks who do want to learn more about how to engage with these things and confront with these things, I have so many resources that I'm happy to share with folks and talk about folks with about, you know, this is maybe not a great way to react on social media because of this. So let's try this instead. Let's, you know, collectively work together and find some solutions. Just keep your eyes and ears open. Be critical. It's okay to be critical of things. And also don't forget that criticism is not censorship.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's so interesting because it's like, I feel like that complaint doesn't go both ways, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's always people defending their ideas that are usually nonsense that are calling something censorship.
Exactly.
It's also interesting. Yep. Yeah. Well, and anytime that there is one that even remotely, comes in line with the ancient Mediterranean, I'm going to try to talk about it on my show. So that'll help.
Exactly. Yep.
At the very least.
It's also a funny comment from like the folks who are really into pseudo-arch or proponents of pseudo-arch who are like, well, you archaeologists are all just like super duper close-minded. And it's like, well, no, like I read your books and I watch your presentations and sometimes I even try to go to your conferences and your special events. Like I'm trying to be in there as you seem to want us to be in there. The moment I criticize something or I'm skeptical of something, all of a sudden it's like we're shut out, but then told that we're being closed. It's just a weird thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think it's just, it's one of those things that's really hard to understand because it lacks in logic completely. Because it's like, no, but you want us to be because that is what fits your narrative. So you're never going to actually like accept the fact that actually like archaeologists by and large want to learn more and want to understand and like want to. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think this came up a lot in the conversation around that show and then just anything in the world of pseudo-archaeology, but it's like this idea, I mean, it connects to this idea that like archaeologists are hiding anything, but it's like, no, like archaeologists would want you to know, not least because they're all just enormous nerds who want the information out there, but also because like, your careers rely on you publishing information. If you found something that's ridiculously cool, if somebody found Atlantis, somebody is going to publish about it. They're going to talk about it either because they're an enormous nerd and they want to spread the news, or because they want their career to blow up. Like, there's just so many reasons why if these big, you know, outlandish ideas were true, like, we would know about it.
Exactly. And that's also like a very key characteristic of pseudorc in general, is constantly like disparaging academia, painting academia in this really terrible light of the suppressors and, you know, we're really, really terrible. But then at the same time, desperate for the approval of academia. Always being like, oh, you guys are terrible, like, you're suppressing all this stuff, but I need you to look and acknowledge what I've found. Like, what is it, right?
Yeah. If we acknowledge it, then are we okay? Like, it's like, if archaeologists were to suddenly acknowledge these things as truthful, like, would they turn around and be like, well, the archaeologists are right, they're not hiding anything? Like, yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah,
well,
it is.
I will finish this all off by telling you and my listeners about an author who I will not name, but who has requested to be on my show at least 2 times, it might be 3 times, to talk about how he has found Atlantis and how this is he's without a doubt located it physically on a map. And I'm like, I mean, one, I'm not entertaining that at all. Then where is it? Where are the pictures?
Yeah.
Show me.
Yeah.
Somebody else has got to go find it. If you said you found it, and it's just every time I read the blurb that it gets sent to me so often, I'm just like, well, but how could you say you found something when you're still the only person talking about it?
Yeah. You know, the moment you start saying that, there was a particular person who first came to mind who was like, I wonder if it's that person. And I know we've talked about that person last time. The emailer.
This is a different one.
Yeah. And then I started to think, like, so at first I thought, oh, is it that person? And then I was like, you know, even just scrolling Reddit the other week, I came across like 3 different people being very certain that they've got the proof. They found Atlantis. They just need someone to listen to it. And so now I'm like, well, no, I could be anybody.
Yeah. Well, this guy has written a book about it, you see, that is available on Amazon. But also, he's a doctor.
I do know.
He uses the word doctor a lot in his title, but also it's of like engineering or something. I'm like, okay.
It's always engineers. That is a thing, an actual thing.
They can find Atlantis because the archaeologists cannot.
Gosh. Engineers really, and pseudorc is a thing.
Interesting.
I think actually I do know who you're talking about, because I think I might have that book.
Ooh. Okay, well, we'll talk about this once we've wrapped up. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I'm sorry that my brain has been mush. We're gonna put it together and it's gonna sound a lot like my brain was less mushy, but so the listeners know, it's been a day. But yeah, could you tell my listeners where to find you, where to read more, whatever you want to share about this wild conspirituality and pseudo-archaeology world you exist in?
Oh my gosh.
I love that word. Can you tell? I just want to say conspirituality as much as possible.
Conspirituality. Yep. It's a lovely word. Yeah, because it just kind of flows. Twitter and Mastodon now, because who knows what's happening with Twitter, are still good places to find me, which just cult_archaeo. If you send me a DM on either of those and I don't respond, it's more likely that I just didn't see it. But yeah, I'm there. Those are the best, easiest places to find me.
Nerds, thank you as always for listening. As much as this isn't about any one specific topic in the ancient Mediterranean, I really do think it's so important to bring attention to the things that have become so popular and what dangers they actually pose. Particularly when it comes to real archaeology and how these people in their so-called documentaries malign real archaeologists who are doing real and interesting and important work when it comes to understanding human history. Real archaeology is fun and nerdy and fascinating, and honestly, real archaeologists just want to share everything they know. They're not hiding anything. They're too nerdy and too desperate to publish to hide anything. Just think about these things the next time you come across these types of media. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy them, you can't laugh, whatever you want. Just keep in mind what's going on in the background, even if it's not obvious on the surface. Who they're insulting and who they're suggesting are lying or hiding the truth, and what dangers that may pose to the wider world and our understanding of human history and what human beings are and were very capable of doing all over the world. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is written and produced by me, Liv Albert. Michaela Smith is the Hermes to my Olympians and handles so many podcast-related things. Truly, any and everything, Michaela is a lifesaver. Stephanie Foley works to transcribe the podcast for YouTube captions and accessibility. The podcast is hosted and monetized by iHeartMedia. Help me continue bringing you the world of Greek mythology and the ancient Mediterranean by becoming a patron, where you'll get bonus episodes and more. Visit patreon.com/mythsbaby or click the link in this episode's description. I am Liv, and obviously, I love this shit.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.